Season 4, Episode 6, Yes Sir, That's My Baby. An anonymous tip brings them to kind of like an open area, I guess, where a lot of homeless people are, and there is a dead dude in the middle of the street. He is carrying a ankle holster with no gun in it, and his jacket's missing, which they find on a homeless dude.
Yeah, and a woman pisses herself.
Okay, well, I was going to get to that. I was kind of leading up, kind of going up in steps, but if you want to cut to it. A woman is talking to Greg Medavoy, and there's a part where she says, yeah, there's a limo, guys get out of the limo, and they start fighting, and then it didn't involve me, so I got out of there. And I don't know if you agree with this. Medavoy kind of puts on a voice you would do for a child, and is like, now, was it a limo or was it a town car? What we call a town car.
He does, yeah, he kind of mansplains, but she is crazy, so I think he's just trying to make sure and so they can look for the right car.
Well, you say she's crazy. She's very with it, it seems, and gives all the answers in a simple way, and then she pisses herself. What's very weird is she's pissing herself while talking to Greg, and then Greg kind of freaks out, and as he turns around says under his breath, "Woman pissed on my shoes."
It would have been funnier if he was like, "Do you guys smell asparagus?"
Too bad they didn't have you in there doing punch-up, Kyle, for... Okay, guys, we got this scene. What if he said, "Do you smell asparagus?" Home run joke.
And then we can tie asparagus to the killer somehow.
Jeez. Well, what I don't...
Sorry.
I don't understand something about... I've never understood why people get upset when, like, their shoes get messed up because they, like, touch the ground. And when Medavoy is like, "She pissed on my shoes," well, she just pissed her pants, and then the puddle came slowly towards your shoes. And you walk around in New York, so you've definitely stepped in, like...
Yeah, and he walks around in, like, crime scenes.
Yeah, so this is not that big a deal, but...
Like, he gets in shootouts, like... I don't know. No, I get what you're saying.
Like, the urine is the problem.
Just get a Clorox wipe and wipe the front of your shoe off. Like, that's all you have to do.
Also, not super important, but the female character, I believe, says her name is Margaret Norman. But on IMDb, they called her Margaret Normal, and she is definitely not normal. Anyway, this is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and my brother Kyle, who is on the other line, you're going through every single episode of NYPD Blue, and here's the theme song to NYPD Blue.
That was the most awkward introduction I think you've ever done.
Yep, it is. I'm not even going to pretend it wasn't.
And Kyle, my brother, who's on the other line.
And I might edit, I think to myself, I'll edit that. No, I won't. I'm just going to leave it in the way it is. Anyway, they come back, and we have an introduction of a new character to the precinct. It is the first episode with Detective Jill Kirkendall.
Does Jill Kirkendall looks like she has, like she's Jack Skellington. With the skin.
She's made of bones?
Like, I was looking at her, like, cheekbones that go to her chin, and she looks very much like a skeleton.
Well, she is a very skinny lady, and she... The only thing that I could keep thinking about Jill Kirkendall is that she's rocking the haircut we used to rock in the 90s. Like, that's the only thing I think about when I see Jill Kirkendall, is she's rocking our, like, preteen haircuts.
That haircut's kind of like, is she a lesbo or isn't she?
I think that haircut says, hey, I might be a woman, but you're not going to walk all over me when I do my police work.
This is what this whole episode's for.
Her introduction.
This is her coming out episode.
Her coming out as a hard ass. And we'll go through her story first, because it's kind of straightforward, and it's the story where we get the title from. As she's walking in and is about to get shown to her desk, a gentleman...
Straightforward. You talk about, like... You talk about a man... murdering a woman in an alley, taking a baby straight forward.
Well,
anyways.
I mean, it's it's the truth. Like, it is the side, like, B story to what's going on. She starts working as she walks into the squad.
Well, when she walks in, no one is there.
Not a single person. It's just her and the lieutenant, and he's about...
Isn't it the crazy lady? Is the crazy lady at the desk? I don't remember.
I think Jerry is there. But I don't remember. I don't remember if she's being there. I just remember seeing Kirkendall, and I was like, oh, shit, it's the first Kirkendall episode. But when she walks in, lieutenant is like, yeah, your desk, let me show you your desk. And then a dude's like, Jerry must be there, because she's the one that's like, I have a guy here who says someone's threatening his life. So then...
Oh, yeah. Okay, yeah. Anyway, sorry, small point, doesn't matter.
Jill's like, I'm on it, and then takes him back to her desk. And this guy is like... saying this guy's trying to threaten my life, saying that I'm his sister's baby daddy, and I need to do right by them.
So I had a thought about this character.
Mm-hmm.
We'll learn more as you go along through the story. But, like, I feel bad for him. But then he says stupid shit.
Yeah, like, he says really stupid, horrible things.
Like, I never should have laid eyes on this bitch.
That fat bitch. He keeps calling her fat.
Yeah, then he calls her... Yeah, then does he call her fat at one point?
I believe he's referred to this woman as big bitch.
Yeah.
Fat bitch. He's always referred to her as a bitch. His name...
And when Jill Kirkendall is interviewing him, she says something
awkward. I wrote it down.
Was it the, talk to me like I can understand you?
Yep, the quote is, talk so I can understand you.
Yeah, talk so I can understand you, yeah. That line was a little, it caught me off guard the second time I heard it.
It was very mother asking for the assistant manager kind of speak.
100%.
Like right when the guy started talking. Because he's explaining that this guy is threatening his life. He's saying a lot of weird shit, like, that's for sure. I understand what he's saying, but the way he's going about it is very weird, where he's like, I'm not going to catch none of this shit, and I can't even...
No, I agree. I agree. He's talking in a lingo, but... She didn't have to put it that way.
Yeah, she didn't have to go, hey, talk so I can understand you. But what's really funny is I wrote down a quote he had, which was, hey, man, I'm just trying to stay happy-go-funky, you dig?
And it was they ended it with some weird shit. I think that was just the writers like, we need to make sure that they understand that he's a weirdo and she's okay in what she said.
It seemed almost like he was a rejected Warriors character. Because he had, like, a denim jacket with a bunch of shit all over it, and he was talking all weird.
And his name was Ares.
Yeah, his name was Ares. To continue with that story, Jill goes to their apartment to tell the guy to stop threatening him. And because she hears the baby crying and comes in to check on the baby. And the way that this woman is carrying a baby is, like, seems wrong.
She's holding it like she's holding a bag of groceries.
Like, so the way she's holding it is like, okay, that's a baby. You're supposed to have unconditional love and care for it.
Or like a pile of firewood.
So
this whole scene was to show how strong she is because she went by herself.
It's also kind of a how hard is Jill Kirkendall moment because she's squaring up to this guy. And then she's also caring and concerned because she keeps hearing the baby, so she goes back and takes a look.
Yeah, and then she's, like, super motherly.
But then, when she comes back to the house, she has a meeting with Lou to show her keen detective skills, because she says, I'm pretty sure that's not her kid. We should put out a look for people who are missing babies.
Missing persons.
And Lou gives her kind of a talking to because she went out on her own. And for a good reason, because if she goes out on her own and some shit happens and no one's there to back up her story, then she's in deep shit.
Yeah, I totally understand that. Like, I get it. You gotta protect yourself.
Because, yeah, I mean, that guy makes one claim about what you did to get into his apartment, then you have no recourse or anyone to back you up on that.
But if you were doing good police work, wouldn't people, like, not have a reason to call? You know what I mean?
Yeah, in theory.
Like, she does it in theory. She shouldn't need a second person there.
I think it's kind of like when she talks to Bernard, that's the guy's name, it's Bernard and Brenda.
Bernard.
When she talks to Bernard, she says, "Are you gonna
Nard dog?
He's the Nard dog. He was the first Nard dog. He's looking for some Nard pups. Oh, damn it! Now I'm gonna do Andy Bernard quotes for the rest of the episode. You're welcome." But she says to him, "Like, are you gonna let me in?" He's like, "What? You got a warrant?" If she came into the apartment and he has a witness of her entering the apartment, and he says he didn't give her permission to do that.
Yeah, but she did it. She didn't come into the apartment.
Yeah, she did.
But that was after she felt the child was in danger. Guarantee you there's probably a rule. But she stood there and talked to him outside. She did the right thing because she made those snappy comments. She was like, oh, you know a lot about police procedure. Huh, you criminal. 3 callers in 3 years or something like that.
Yeah.
So she stood there and talked to him, and then when the baby wouldn't stop crying, she's like, I'm going to check on that baby because it doesn't seem right. And I feel like the baby's sick or something. And so, like, I think, and then he stepped aside, called the girl out. She looked at the baby and walked out.
Mm-hmm.
But I get why they have to have a second person there.
Yeah, just in case.
Yeah.
When she comes back to the house, there's no, I think it's the next day, there's no missing persons report that they can look into. And Aries comes back and he was choked and told he had to marry Brenda.
Bernard caught him down, but he got mad at him because he ratted on him.
Yeah, that's another part. Bernard was pissed off that he went to the police.
And then Lieutenant told her to stop giving this guy free social work or something like that.
Yeah, basically. And he says he'll go forward to press charges, so they go to pick him up. And when they're picking him up, Jill notes she'd be sooner changing a tire when she's supposed to be changing the baby.
I didn't get... Oh, yeah. I didn't think it was...
Because she's supposed to be changing the baby's diaper, and she's like, she'd be sooner changing a tire. Like, she just has no fucking idea what she's doing. And they, you know, they pick up whatever his name is, Bernard.
The guy who played Bernard was really scary.
He's a scary presence.
I don't know if that's what they were, like, going for him to always be menacing. But, like, he was, like, always intense, and everything was, like felt super real. Like, he would hit you. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I get you. He was always at level 10. Like, before anyone even started talking. And they pin him up against the car, they arrest him, and while they're dragging him in, he says something to the effect of, you don't know what I'd do if you didn't have that badge and gun. And Jill says, well, that's going to be...
Like, he basically threatens a woman. And like, then... I know she's a cop, but, like, he wants to strip her of the badge, and he wants to fight a woman one-on-one.
Well, that's the weird thing, because there's, what, like, 6 cops there? And when he says that, I immediately thought, oh, he's talking to Greg, or,
That scene reminded me of, like, the Downey police. Because, like, whenever anything happened to Downey, like, all of the policemen showed up to, like, where it was, and I feel like that's what that squad did. It's like they took everybody with them.
Yeah, they have no reason to believe that he's extremely violent, because he's only threatened this dude. It's not like he's walking around with, like, knives and, like, killing, like, multiple people. But they still brought single person.
And at this point, they only think they stole the baby.
Yeah, they don't even know the truth.
They haven't figured out that he ended up killing a woman in an alley and took her baby.
When they get Brenda in a room and Bernard in a separate room and they're talking to Brenda... They put the baby a little bit away from her, and then they ask her questions about the baby, and it's clear she doesn't know shit about this baby.
So, I feel like there's a question for these next 2 episodes. And that should be the theme.
Okay. Question for the next
the
2 episodes.
The question is...
New segment. Question of the next 2 episodes with Kyle.
Are they retarded?
Oh, this Brenda woman? 100%. I think she's slow as can be.
Pocket that question and think about the next episode, too.
Yeah, I know.
Is she retarded, or is she just super scared because he's a scary guy?
I think, if I can be as nice as I can about it, she is incredibly slow and scared. I don't know why. Oh, because she says that Bernard came up with this plan because she liked Aries, but Aries dumped her. And Bernard's plan, genius as it is where... We're basically going to do, hey, you had a baby Uber, where we're going to sit outside hospitals, wait for people with babies to come out, offer them $1 rides into town, but then when they get in the car, we're going to offer them $50, or was it $100? I think it was 50.
500. They said 500 for sure.
We're going to offer them $500 for their baby. So it's just $500, we get your baby, you're out here $500 richer. And the woman, you know, who had just been tricked into a car and then given this proposition, says no, and she tries to get out of the car, so Bernard just strangles her ass, and then leaves her in an alley and takes the baby.
Yeah, she done.
She
gone.
But the way Brenda talks about it, she seems very, very scared, but also very dumb. Because even
so that's my question, is maybe is she just dumb? And maybe she's not a mentally challenged?
Well, I'm thinking maybe, she's just dumb.
Maybe she's socially challenged, but, like, I don't know. But she came off like, man, did he take advantage of a retarded girl?
It definitely paints Aries in a terrible light, that he was like, oh, I can hit this dumb lady, and I won't have any consequences, and then he gets threatened by Bernard. It's a lot of shitty people in this story, but I don't think she's retarded. I think she's just dumb. That would be my final analysis.
Well, good analysis, Doctor.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Jill Kirkendall runs that interview, and it's pretty legit, but at the end of it, Simone kind of gives her, like, a friendly arm squeeze or something and says, that's a nice piece of conversation, detective.
Here's my dick.
You think that... hold on. We can talk about that later, because there's reason to believe that's possible. If Kirkendall and Simone might be a possible future thing. But
imagine what if. Imagine what would have happened if instead of down the road what happened, you know?
Mm-hmm. Anyway, the other stuff that's going on, when they come back to the house after the dude who was shot in the middle of the street...
Wait. So, like, they arrest the dude and everything, right?
Yeah, they just don't really talk about it.
Yeah, they arrest him and then, like, they kind of trick her into giving everything up.
Kirkendall has a conversation with her to get all the information, and then they give the baby to social services, and then, in theory, the dude's arrested. And she takes him to where the body must be.
The other thing that's happening in this episode is Jerry has finally crossed the line and made Sipowicz go to Lieutenant Fancy because he is starting to feel uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was in the middle of this episode when Sipowicz is at his desk. Jerry walks up to him and gives him a rubber frog.
Yeah.
And she says, I noticed you had a frog on your desk. Here's a frog. And it's made of rubber, like the cutoff condom. Wait, hold on. Because I wrote it down because it's a sweet, like, punk band name. She says...
What?
She says, the frog, it's rubber, like the human condom cutoff underwear I'm wearing. And Sipowicz just looks at her, like, disgusted and confused. And then he cut, like, just... I love when Sipowicz has had enough with something. Where, like, he throws something on the desk and he, like... just, like, storms into the lieutenant's office.
I have seen that hundreds of times at the job I worked at before I left California. Because I worked with a bunch of old men. And I've seen that, like, fed up look when something has finally gotten to them and they're just, like, done. Every old white man does it.
They slam the papers down or the something and they storm into the office. And they're in the office, and while Simone and Sipowicz is in the office with Fancy, he was on the phone, Simone runs something by him, and then Sipowicz closes the door behind him to talk with the lieutenant, and I wanted to say some of the things he did. He's like, this woman is making advances on me that are unwarranted, she's a rubber fanatic, and she's not leaving me alone. And he said, well, did you let her know that you don't want these advances? Like, yeah, she's not even listening to them. And then he's like, did she continue the advances? And he said, she's making physical adjustments with my collar and so forth.
Yeah, that made me laugh, because, like, that's like the least weird thing that she did. Like, I don't know, like, if someone adjusted my collar, I'd be okay with it. It's when she was like, opened her shirt and was like, I'm wearing a rubber bodysuit. Like, that's the weird shit he needs to be focusing on.
And she said things like, it holds in all the sweat and juices.
Yeah. She's like, that weird ass shit that she says.
That would be the part. And the great part about this is the first episode with Jill Kirkendall, and this might be the last episode with Jerry, I don't know for sure, because towards the end of the episode, Fancy calls for Gina, who's been in a couple episodes, who's James's eye candy currently.
We get to see James Martinez is flirting again,
which he is so good at it. I wrote down a piece.
The best.
I wrote down a piece of his dialogue because I felt it was so fucking harsh.
Like, go ahead. I think I know what you're talking about.
But Gina comes in, talks to him, and she's worried, and she finds out that they want to switch PAAs.
She's like really nervous to talk to Fancy, which is kind of funny.
When she gets done talking to him, she comes back out and she goes to James, like, I guess we're switching PAAs. And James is like, oh, that's amazing. That's awesome. And James is like, fucking his boner's on 100%. And then she said, yeah Fancy said it'd be an even switch. And James says, basically, that's not an even trade, Gina. We ought to have to buy Anti-Crime's coffee and fill their fridge for 3.5 years. Which is like, Jesus Christ! Like, it'd be different if we found out if we find out Jerry is bad at her job.
It's a different time, though, Kirk. Like, the price of milk isn't as bad.
But just the idea of James being like, oh, no, we should be up there sucking their dicks because of this move. Like, this is the greatest move that's ever happened. I should be giving out handies at lunch every day for 5 years because we switched PAAs. It's like, Jesus Christ, Jerry wasn't a bad PAA to you, I don't think. It was just...
Yeah, but he hasn't liked her from the beginning because didn't he also call her, like, Rosie O'Donnell or Roseanne or something?
Oh, yeah, he made comments about her weight. Basically, after finding out Gina exists, and she's the PAA upstairs, he was like, man, we got this dumpy piece of shit. Like,
well, no, this is good. Because she got transferred upstairs, right? Wasn't Gina, like, temping or something for a minute? But then, like, she got transferred upstairs? I don't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. But yeah,
don't be
piece of shit.
Like, he's so happy that they got rid of Jerry. Like, I don't know why, other than his boner for Gina. After Sipowicz made his claims, he goes and talks to Jerry, who, this is another, like, let me speak to your manager moment with Jerry, where the way she's talking is like, no, you can't do these things.
Dude, she basically calls Andy a little bitch.
Yeah, because Fancy's like, hey, I understand that you have been harassing Sipowicz. And she says, well, nothing that I thought would be upsetting. We're only talking about undergarments and whatnot. And he's like, what exactly? And she said, oh, you know, it's not a big deal. And then he's like, no, it is a big deal. He's very uncomfortable by your advances. And she said, I'm sorry, I misunderstood what was going on. And then Fancy leaves, and he's clearly not happy with how that conversation went. I mean, he's going to get rid of her.
Yeah, that conversation went left, but this is when she basically calls Andy a little bitch.
Yeah, the quote is, what a little baby you are. What a tattletale. And then later, when Fancy gives her the news
that she's leaving, she does not take it well.
Yeah, she basically says, well, I don't see it why I would have to leave because of this. And then Fancy essentially says, fine, we can do it the paperwork way where we actually file claims and we can see how that works out. She gets pissy and then he's like, are you going to accept the transfer? And she says yes. And he goes, cool, it's effective tomorrow morning. And just deuces. Like,
yeah, Fancy gets really white dad with it. He gets very white dad with it.
She then says...
But to Fancy's credit, I give him credit because he tried everything before doing it that way, you know what I mean?
Oh yeah, he tried to talk to her like an adult. She's the one that like fucking turned into a child.
He tried to be civil.
And then when Sipowicz comes out of the bathroom, she's like, well, you got your way. She says, I'm going to be transferring upstairs. And he just is like, good. Like, yeah. Sipowicz's response is like, okay, I don't give a shit. Fucking fuck off. Oh man. The main case in this episode is... the gentleman was shot in his car, or shot outside of a limo, and then they stole the limo. They go to the man's wife, and she has an emotional moment. Of course, she gets told her husband died. We learn about his backstory. He used to be a firefighter. She actually ran all the rentals for him, so she gives up a name, Mr. Curry, and said, I think he was a homosexual. At least that's what he was not telling me when he'd come home.
That made me laugh a little bit.
Yeah, he was a homosexual. And when they
really hammered home this fire fighter thing.
Yeah, because he got injured in at one point, and then they forced him out, and he hated being a driver. During her emotional moment where Simone is a shoulder to cry on, she says, and he hated it because all of his friends were still doing it, and he had no one to talk to.
And then they show Andy just fucking around with a fire truck.
They leave her, because then she's like, I'll have no one to talk to, I'm all alone. And then they're like, yeah, that's sad. Anyway, we're going back to the office. And they go back to the thing, and they run it by Fancy. And there was a weird moment where they tell Fancy, yeah, he was a client, and we think he might be a homosexual. That's what the wife gets the feeling. And then Fancy, I don't know if this is just procedure. He's like, does he have a history of violence, or does he have nasty friends? And it was like, are you asking that because he's a homosexual or because of the case?
Oh, yeah. Homophobia was on display. Front and center.
Just a little.
Andy's rock hard on it.
Oh,
they
man.
Let Fancy in on it. The only one that seems pretty cool about it is Simone.
The guy comes in, Lawrence Curry, and they have an interrogation with him where they pocket the idea that he's a homosexual to see if he's going to tell the truth. And then fucking Simone just like dumps it on him so hard where he's just like, oh yeah, well, maybe you're homosexual and maybe you like to go out to bars after work. And then the guy tightens up and says, I have a wife. And he's like, okay, so give us the name of the dudes you were with. And the guy tries to like pretend he's just trying to help them, but he's not giving them the info. Simone turns on the screws, and eventually the guy's like, oh, it was Billy and... what's their fucking name?
Luke
and Billy. Luke. Luke wears a cowboy hat and looks like a fucking dumbass. And...
Now that guy's grade A retarded.
Are they grading retardation now with, like, letters?
Yeah, like eggs, right?
This guy's grade A retarded. And then he starts giving the descriptions of these guys, which is an incredible detail because he obviously fucked both of them. He said, I swear to you...
He pretty much admits to that. He says we went to a hotel.
Well, no, because the thing that was weird is Simone was like, hey, could you give us descriptions of what these guys look like? Because they said where they would be so they could go pick them up. And he starts giving, like, way too intense of descriptions. Where he's like, oh, he had a scar in his body and this and that and the hair and all that. And Simone is like, general description. Basically, Simone is like, stop getting a boner thinking about these dudes and give me a regular description.
Well, he kind of pops off at the mouth because when he mentions the scar, Simone says, oh, does it look like a stab wound or like a medical scar? And the guy's like, oh, that's beyond my expertise. And then Simone got mad. He's like, well, how about instead of talking about their delicate bodies, you give me something I can go on? Because he calls one of the guy's bodies delicate, I think.
And Sipowicz, I think, said, geez, you were expert enough to know these boys weren't violent.
Yeah, yeah. But Simone does not like the guy because he's gay, so... I mean, Sipowicz.
They go to the gay club that they hear that this guy will be at.
Yes.
It's very awkward because it's clear that Simone and Sipowicz do not belong in a gay club. And they and they try to have some light conversation that isn't going anywhere about Russell. Russell's also brought up by Medavoy when they pick up Bernard. There's a moment where he brings it up. He's like, oh man, how's Russell on that undercover duty? And he's like, I don't know, we're not talking about it that much, Greg. And Greg's like, I can't believe it. I don't know how she stands at being touched and whatnot. And... basically, Martinez is like, well, you don't have to fucking worry about it, Medavoy, so shut up. Like,
Medavoy's an idiot.
Sipowicz asks about it, and it gets shut down, because, and this is a weird moment in this episode, an Asian gentleman walks up to Sipowicz.
Oh my god.
Clearly to hit on him. And all Sipowicz says
Flasian.
Is...
I call him a Flasian.
You called him a Flasian?
Flasians. Flasian. Flaming Asians.
Jesus, Kyle. Anyway, the guy who walked up to him, I swore I've seen him before as an actor.
Okay.
And I looked it up. His name is Charles Ray Chun.
Uh-huh.
The only thing he was in that I could see that I would remember, he was the flight attendant in Dumb and Dumber that tells Jim Carrey he can't run down the jetway and he jumps out the jetway.
way.
And I was like, God, I've seen this dude before, I swear to God. So when I looked it up, I was like, oh my God, that is the most random, minuscule character that I remembered.
That's his only thing? That's crazy.
Well, he's been in a bunch of shit, but that was the only, like, as random side characters, but that was the thing I was like, oh shit, that's what I remember him from. Charles Ray Chun from Dumb and Dumber. But Sipwit says, get the hell away from me when the guy, looks at him. And then they sit and wait for the high sign.
So we're just going to gloss over the fact that he says it in a way that is very homophobic.
Well, I mean, here's the thing, Kyle. It was a different time. Manhood, from Sipwit's perspective, is nowhere near being gay. And
okay, but what did you expect going to a gay bar?
He thought the dudes would be smart enough to realize, okay, these guys aren't gay, they're here for some other reason. It's not...
Or maybe they're into guys that look like Sipwits, and maybe there are guys that go to the bar that do that, or are struggling. I don't know, what did you expect to happen at a gay bar?
I feel like his get the hell away from me is just like, that's the Sipwits, please leave me alone. He doesn't have the capacity to say, please leave me alone, I'm on a case. He only has the capacity to be like, get the hell away from me. Because he didn't, pop off an F-word or a slur. It was just like, hey, get the fuck away from me. Or get the hell away from me. I'm not as offended by it because...
Because you're racist.
What? Racist? That doesn't even make sense.
I don't know.
I wasn't offended by it just because I was like, that's Sipwits. I feel like you got two guys in a bar that clearly look like cops. They're looking for someone. I think you make the decision. You make the distinction that they're not there to party.
As the Blue has taught us, some cops like to fuck dudes.
I don't know what made that joke better. The fact that, for some weird reason, the volume was a lot higher just when you said that. As the NYPD Blue taught us, some cops like to fuck dudes.
Some do, and maybe some gay dudes have a fetish for fucking dudes that look like cops.
For dudes that look like warthogs. So,
Maybe that, those are bears, bro. Come on.
Anyway, Kyle. They catch a look at Luke as he comes in the bar, and they take him down, and he has a gun in his pocket. Sipwits does make a joke as he leaves the place that was a little much, I thought, where he said, sorry, boys, I only have one set of handcuffs.
That was unnecessary.
They take him back to the house, and they start interrogating him. The kid's clearly a moron. He tells...
He basically admits to being around the crime.
Yeah, he says that Curry tipped the driver $100 to keep them, to drive them wherever they want, and then his buddy Billy started doing speed in the back, and because of that, the driver told him to get the fuck out. They had an argument, which spilled out onto the street. Billy pulled out a gun, he shot the guy several times until he was dead, and Luke had no idea what was going on, and his real name's Rick, not even Luke. But Rick is a dumbass because he doesn't even know what the term remorse means. And he thinks he's getting away scot-free because he didn't actually shoot him, even though he was compliant in doing drugs and stealing a limo and leaving the guy's body in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, not calling the police.
That's the sound of the police.
Jesus.
You don't know that song?
I know that song. It was just a very random moment to hear it when I was reading the notes.
Dang, Kirk, you listen to KRS-One? That blows my mind more than anything today.
I don't listen to KRS-One. I've just heard that song before. I think there's a big difference.
Fair enough, but the fact that you've heard it blows my mind.
One of the things that Rick, who was Luke, brings up is that Billy...
Oh my God, no, he's Luke. Can we just keep it at Luke?
Fine. Luke brings up that Billy has the bug. He's got HIV. And he's banging some dude in Florida for meds. And that's where he's off to after he dumped the limo.
His med bang.
The reason this...
Is that what Jared Leto did in... Dallas Buyers Club?
I haven't seen Dallas Buyers Club, but I imagine what he was doing is just starving himself to win an Oscar. But this investigation basically leads to nowhere because Curry brings in a lawyer to represent Luke because
he's got a boner for him.
Because he doesn't want him to get caught up in it because he doesn't believe he did anything wrong. And
because if he gets him off, then he can have sex with him more.
Pretty much. Simone is a little pissed off currently because he had a talk with Russell, which we'll talk about in a second. But he goes up to Curry and basically says, so what are you doing here? And he's like, I'm getting him a lawyer so he doesn't get railroaded by this situation. He's like, so you're all about Mike and you're sorry for him, except you're gonna defend this asshole who helped him get murdered. And then the guy's like, I just want him represented. And then he's like, I think you just want to have sex with him. And then the guy said, I think maybe you got a boner for him. And then that's what Sipowicz is like, oh, or Simone says, the ACLU stuff is out the window, and now all you have is your dirty soul. And then tells Jerry, make sure this guy leaves before I get back, and then just leaves him there.
I thought they were very harsh to the gay man. But...
to Curry?
Yeah.
Well, Curry's an asshole.
He's
trying to help out.
There was times where I felt like they crossed the line, but that's neither here nor there.
I mean, I think Curry kind of shown himself to be kind of a douchebag who didn't want to give them the right information, and then when they got the guy, wanted to keep his fuckboy out of prison so he can keep fucking him while his wife doesn't know about it. He's kind of an asshole, in my opinion.
I know, but when you lay it out like that...
When you lay out the facts of the case, he seems like an asshole.
Kirk, I'm telling you, I just watched this, like, this morning. And they come really hard at him in the first interrogation.
Well, that's because he's trying to play coy, like he doesn't know what they're talking about.
True.
And then when...
They ask him, like, softball questions, and he lies about it.
And then when they finally get him up against the ropes, he then just starts talking about shit that's completely irrelevant. And then they're trying to get that information out of him. And then, when he comes back, he only comes back with a lawyer to get the guy who got Mike killed off. Because he's a scumbag. He's a piece of shit. I don't know. I was completely on their side once he came back with the lawyer.
No, fair enough.
Now, the last things to talk about. Simone's going through some turbulent issues. Because, one, Savino, who's handling the Henry Caulfield case, comes in because he found out that Simone tried to talk to the dog breeder of that girl.
Yeah, he comes in hot. He's angry.
And he's upset. And
I love it because he's so small compared to Simone.
And he's pissed because Simone did step on his investigation and then tried to cover it up. But then when Simone apologizes and explains, Savino basically says, I'm nowhere. I got nothing. And it's getting frustrating. And Simone says, can I go back at Henry, like, as hard as I want? Because I think he's got it, but he's not giving it up.
Yeah, it's really weird. He went from being angry that he's overstepped to coming in and saying, hey, overstep more, please.
It is funny. He does come in super, super duper hot. And then Simone is like, look, man, do you want me to throw myself out a window? Like, I messed up a little bit. I'm sorry. I tried to spare you that time and energy. And then the guy's like, well, shit, I don't know what I'm doing, man. Can you fix it?
Yeah, it was really weird. He just, like, gives up right away.
Simone says, fine, I'll talk to Henry. And halfway through the episode, he calls Henry because he stiffed him. And he threatens him over the phone, basically saying, if you don't come down here, I'm putting a padlock on where you live and throwing all your shit out.
That's what I like when Simone finally gets mad.
And Henry,
I feel like he has some pretty good, like, one-liners and some zingers.
Mm-hmm.
And he does, and it only comes out when he's mad. That's when, like, the ruthlessness comes out in him.
I've also seen him come up with shit, especially in the next episode, because I wrote down a lot of quotes for the next episode. That's a little preview for the future. But the next episode, I wrote a lot of quotes, and some of them are from him, and he's not angry, he's like a little flustered. Like, occasionally, the characters will just get so flustered that they're like, I don't give a fuck if you're offended by this, I'm just gonna say it. And that was a good moment. Those are good moments. But he brings Henry in, and, you know, takes off his glasses and hits him until Henry tells him the truth.
Yeah, he smacks him a bunch of times.
And it was, I think the one moment I thought Simone looked genuinely scary was in this episode, and he has Henry like in the corner of the room, and then they cut back,
blocking him,
and he cuts back to Simone, and he's like in red light, and he just takes off his jacket.
Yeah,
I was like, holy shit, he's gonna beat the fuck out of this. He's gonna beat the fuck out of Henry, and the way he was threatening him was like, I will break your glasses in two, Henry. I will take off your shoes and make you walk on the street barefoot. I will send you out of here naked, Henry. And then he's just, like, beating the shit out of him.
It was just funny that, like, after he breaks his glasses, he was like, I'm gonna take your shoes. So that made me laugh. I was like, is he supposed to feel threatened by that? Like, is that supposed to make him give it up?
Also, just for half a second, I thought he was like, I'm gonna take off your shoes and beat you with them. But instead, he's like, I'm gonna take off your shoes and make you go outside!
You're gonna catch a cold, bitch. Like you're gonna get influenza.
And he says, Henry eventually tells him the truth after being hit a lot. He tells him the truth that
he's open hand smacked in the face.
Repeatedly.
Like he's slapped.
And this is Henry Caulfield, just for a quick famous face, is Willie Garson, who was in Sex and the City and some other stuff.
He plays the gay best friend.
He tells the truth eventually. He says, I had a deal with a guy that was going to front me coke for the building. It seems extremely convoluted and weird. And the reason he shot her is because he had the wrong address or the wrong room number. And then after...
It was a case of mistaken mail.
And what was really awkward is after he confesses, he like looks out the window... And then Simone kind of gives him, like a head hold.
Yeah.
Like, where he's like, it's okay, buddy. I know I'm the one that beat the fuck out of you, but, you know, everything's gonna be alright.
I did it for your own good.
And then when he's gonna transfer him to Savino, he's like, okay, Savino, this is it. He's like, am I gonna go to jail, Bobby? He's like, just answer his questions. And then he hands Savino Henry's glasses.
Yeah,
and I was like,
this is a weird power move.
I was like, is that like the root of his power? Is that like his hair? Like Samson? Like, you got Henry's glasses.
Like his Achilles?
Yeah, my glasses. I gotta do what you say. It was funny.
It was very, very weird. Very, very weird.
Yeah.
But it was also made me think, is Henry like autistic or retarded? Because he then says something, basically, to Savino, I don't remember things real good.
Yeah, he says, I don't think I was letting myself remember.
Yeah, I made me think, stop for a second, but, yeah.
I don't think that's him being retarded, I think that's him trying to justify why he didn't just come out and say this shit, like, weeks ago.
Obviously, I know that.
Oh, okay.
It's called a bit.
Something else that is barely mentioned, the one scene she has in this episode, Russell talks to Simone, and Simone is like, so what's going on with this Jimmy Leary guy? And she's like, oh, I don't know yet, he's building up to something at the airport, but he's not really talking about it to me yet. And then he like stops her and goes, yeah, you're going to have to give me more than that unless you want to make me crazy. And she says, look, I don't know that much more, also I'm not drinking with him and I'm not having sex with him. He kind of gets pissy with her and is like, oh, well, maybe you're... What did he say? Maybe you're mugging it up with him, and I don't know what that means.
Like, that's 100% something Dad would say.
What does mugging it up with him mean? Like, making out with him?
I would assume something like fucking him or mugging it. I don't know.
What does mugging it mean? Because I spent a lot of time wondering what that possibly means. Maybe you're mugging it up with him. Well, like, because then she goes...
Ask Dad when you see him.
And also, after he says it, where he's like, maybe you're mugging it up with him, and, like, throws a pencil onto his desk, she goes, oh, Bobby. But so, like, mugging it up means something. Like, they both agree to what it means.
She basically says, I'm not having sex with him. Like, that's the biggest thing. The biggest thing is, like, he doesn't want Jimmy Leary dick and his girl.
And she also doesn't want her drinking. Or he doesn't want her drinking.
Yeah. I mean... Sure.
You think that's back burner shit? the former alcoholic. I hope she doesn't drink, kind of.
I don't know. I just think, like, she admits that she's not drinking with them. She says that she's not doing anything else with them. Muggin' hat, the only thing that's worse than drinking is her having sex with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the only other thing Muggin' could mean. Maybe he emphasizes it. I don't know, but... I don't know Muggin' to be anything else.
But I also...
Or anything at all, to be honest with you.
I thought maybe it means, like, making out, shoving your mugs into each other, but I don't think that's what it would mean. Because he's not, like, fucking 15. He's an adult man, so I don't know.
Yeah, I don't think that's what that means either.
But that's the only scene she has, and she introduces herself to Jill Kirkendall. At the end of the episode... There's a moment with Jill Kirkendall, Simone, and Sipowicz on the stairs. And Simone says, hey, you're batting 1,000. And she's like, oh, you know, we get lucky. And he's like, yeah, but I stopped batting 1,000 years ago.
Yeah.
And then Sipowicz comes down the stairs, and he seems like he's going to be short with her. But then he turns around after she says goodnight, and he says, so you held up
Bobby says something. Bobby says something earlier about, oh, that's... Because he introduces himself to Kirkendall earlier.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And he says something like, oh, that big bald-headed man over there, that's my partner. Something like that.
Well, I think he said pretty. I think he was like, that pretty bald mustache man.
That pretty bald-headed man over there is my partner, or something like that.
Andy Sipowicz, if you get a chance. But as Sipowicz goes down the stairs, he turns around and says, well, you held up your end today. And she goes, yeah, I did. And he goes, and this is the quote, we generally clear at least one homicide a detective per day, so yeah, don't go lousing up our stats, bitch. Don't go lousing up our percentage. And I was like, oh, that's awesome. He's gonna be nice to her from the beginning rather than have to like work into it.
Well, she handled that case by herself pretty well. So
yeah, and she cleared it first one in a day. So I think it's the show telling us like she's gonna hold her shit. She's gonna hold up her end of the bargain. Like, what did Medavoy do all day, besides fucking annoy us? Nothing. So, anyway, I think that's all I got in terms of this episode.
Something I found interesting is Sipowicz knows where Kirkendall comes from before meeting her.
Oh, yeah, she comes from the Department of Investigations.
But I've noticed that Andy does that. Andy knows who's coming before most people.
Mm-hmm.
And he knows about them really fast.
He tends... I think it's because he's been in the... If I were to guess. I mean, it's all speculation. Because he's been in the department so long. And he's not a guy that's super sociable, but he keeps his ear to the ground about who is where. And because he probably cares about his department a little bit more than most people would. Like, he cares about who he's working with.
Yeah, I get that.
So...
That's what I was thinking more of it.
That's Sipowicz. He's always paying attention. He's always looking around.
Sipowicz.
He had one funny moment where... I'll end on this. They see the DOA at the very beginning, and he's missing his shoes, and then they catch the homeless man with his jacket. He's like, oh, do you have his shoes too? He's like, nah, somebody else got to those before me. And then they kind of look at him, he's like... And the homeless guy's like, what? My man's not going to need him anymore. Anyway, you got anything else about this episode?
I do not.
Was it weird?
Yeah, it was real weird.
Yeah, I agree.
It was a cool episode. It's alright.
Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrosPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram, AsherBrothersPodcast, if you want to find out when new episodes are coming out or talk to us about episodes, and they're out every other Tuesday, even during the holiday season, which shows our dedication to bringing you NYPD Blue goodness. Have a good one. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls. If you have a moment, please rate and review the show on whatever format you're listening to it, so we can be seen by other people and maybe heard by other people, and more people will watch the best show ever, NYPD Blue. If you need NYPD Blue in your life, it's on Amazon. It's on Hulu every single episode. Also, if you need more NYPD Blue information in your life, we have tons more episodes of NYPD Blue Balls on AstroBuzzPodcast.com and iTunes and where you find a podcast. But there's also books like True Blue, written by some of the creators about the first two seasons. There's Gene Kendall's An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue about the entire series on Amazon for 99 cents. There's also another book called What Would Sipowicz Do, which I just got recently but haven't had a chance to start reading. A collection of essays about NYPD Blue. So there's tons of stuff out there, including our show. We're a small but rambunctious group of fans, and we hope you keep listening to our show and keep watching the best show ever, NYPD Blue.